This podcast is brought to you by Link, simply the best way to learn languages. After you listen to the podcast, sign up for a free account at Link, LINGQ.com, and study the full transcript using Link's revolutionary learning tools. Hi everyone, it's Mark Kaufman here
and Steve.
Again, and Steve, and we are back with another installment of the English Link podcast. Steve has something that he wants to get off his chest today.
Yeah, I mean, I always have something I want to get off my chest, but I want to talk a little bit today about what I would call creative disorder. A creative mess. Or how being too orderly and organized and having lots of rules can in fact be quite sterile for certain applications.
Right. And the example that we were just discussing was Wikipedia, I think, is one of the best examples of this, where in the past you were, in terms of encyclopedias or reference information, you had to resort to paper, hard copy, volume after volume of real encyclopedias, the Encyclopedia Britannica or whatever it was. And obviously those things aren't very portable, B, they're not easy to search through, C, that information by the very nature of those books is not necessarily going to be very up to date.
But it's worse than that, Mark. It's worse than that, because what they're saying is Encyclopedia Britannica will go and find the so-called leading expert, or a leading expert from some leading university, and he'll write some very learned article which will only reflect his own knowledge, experience, prejudice, and so forth and so on.
Right.
But he is a qualified expert.
Mm-hmm.
But on Wikipedia, they have all kinds of people commenting and revising and changing.
Right.
And so you have something that is often shorter, more up to date. And because a number of people are jumping in there and making comments and editing and so on, it ends up being pretty good. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, I go to Wikipedia.
For sure. And most people do. I mean, as you said, number one, it's going to be more up to date. Encyclopedias, even if you have a recently published set, mm-hmm. were written years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The information is at best years old. And maybe it doesn't matter for a lot of things, but it does matter for many things as well. So number one, the ability to have up-to-date information is much, much better on a Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you say, you get more balanced perspective on most things. You get at least input from more than one source.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of the learned sources, and of course the encyclopedia producers, would argue otherwise, but the fact of the matter is that the information for the most part is probably
better.
It serves the purpose
for most people.
Right.
It serves the purpose. And we're talking about this insofar as Link is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
We encourage people to create content for us in different languages, and we can't be editing and correcting and making sure that everything meets some kind of a standard.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, the learners will tell us what's not good and we just remove it.
Mm-hmm.
But in a sense, the more we try to control things, the less good the product is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Web 2.0 environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little less organized, but by having a lot of people commenting and occasionally arguing. There's nothing wrong with the odd little argument.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully people can argue from the point of view that they have to respect the other person.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to agree with them, but they have to respect them and respect their right to present their position. Otherwise, you end up with this sort of everything has to be totally orderly, which presumes that there's one correct point of view, and
mm-hmm.
you're not allowed to argue.
Right.
So, I think that there's a lot in this whole... I mean, that's how the whole internet thing evolved.
Mm-hmm.
People who try to control things, I think they lose out.
Well, there are all kinds of examples of companies that had very restrictive sort of rules on what could or could not be done, being... outdistanced by competitors who had a more open environment and accepted contributions from even non-employees, and the whole open source situation in software development where by providing core components freely, the companies that created them are able to reap the benefits that are developed by others using the original product, which then strengthens the company that created it in the first place.
Well, and even again, getting back to Link, I mean, some people who create content for us, they say, well, what if someone steals my content? Well, so what if they steal your content? Mm-hmm. I mean, you get paid based on usage. Someone else might distribute your content somewhere. People find out about Link. They come to Link. More people use your product, your content. Like, so what? And as you were saying, that they, in the end, it may not be possible to control the ownership of different kinds of content.
I have to believe that's another example of trying to nail down, of trying to protect the rights of the copyright holders, and that battle is being fought mostly right now in the music space, where obviously MP3 files are shared a lot. Probably, I mean, I'm sure there are more shared, in quotes, music files than purchased music files. And so for a long time, the music, whatever you call them, the promoters, producers of music, were trying to sell copyright protected, or DRM, whatever that means. I can't, whatever that stands for. At any rate, DRM protected MP3 files, which then can only be played on one MP3 player or two MP3 players, or they're restricted. Usage is restricted of those files. Eventually, those files don't work for the guy who bought them, which is not a great way to treat your customer. Plus, on top of that, the free version is always readily available. So before too long, I just don't see why people are going to continue paying for something that's inferior, because it's not. You can't trade it with your friend. You can't play it on three players. And you have to pay, and over here there's a free version that's completely free. Mm-hmm. And in the long run, and in fact what's happening now is a lot of the music producers are removing this protection, and they're allowing the songs to be sold DRM free. Mm-hmm. Because in the long run, I guess they figure they're better off. And in fact, some I don't know how well this worked, but some bands released albums freely on the internet and ask people for donations. But the way, I don't know if that worked or not.
Right.
I'm not a big fan of the donation model, but I think in the long run, those songs are going to end up being more of a promotional vehicle to attract people to concerts where you have to pay. Here's the guy performing, you have to pay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole thing is that the production and distribution costs of the music have gone down so dramatically, mm-hmm. that the economic parameters have changed,
right.
Are changing.
Exactly.
And we're, of course, encountering this with Link. And then if we get back to the encyclopedia model, I mean, theoretically, Encyclopedia had this great, Encyclopedia Britannica, for example, had this great name, Britannica, like it's almost run by the government.
Right.
And it's got leading experts and whatever. I sold Encyclopedia Britannica as a 17-year-old in Montreal. And the sales of that was the schlockiest, you know, door-to-door trick salesman thing I'd ever come across. I was amazed. I mean, our lines, like, as I've often said, my opening line when I rang someone's doorbell was to say, if I gave you a complete set of Encyclopedia Britannica free of charge, would you be interested? That was my opener. And so some people would be gullible enough to let me in their home. And then I'd start into my sales presentation. And then I tell them how much it costs. I'd say, you know, for less than a package of cigarettes, every day and stuff. And they said, well, I thought it was free. Then I was supposed to say, well, you have to understand, we can't possibly give it to you for free. Normally that would have me out the door in a hurry. But, I mean, the cost, in those days, it would sell for like $480.
Mm-hmm.
And I made $200 per sale if I sold any.
Yeah,
like there were encyclopedia salesmen who were making a tremendous amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, it's presented this great authoritative, you know, source, Encyclopedia Britannica. No school can be without it. No home can be without it.
Right.
On the other hand, it was sold on some kind of a pyramid schlocko sales system. So it's very expensive to distribute. Very expensive to produce. So Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I mean, it's there. It's totally inexpensive to produce,
right.
Totally inexpensive to distribute. And so it's a...
And more wide-ranging. I mean, the encyclopedia can't possibly have as much stuff as is in Wikipedia, because it's limited by the number of volumes they can crank out. Wikipedia, mm-hmm. there are pages on everything in umpteen languages.
But there could be material there that's not very good. I mean, somebody's mm-hmm. going to get on there. I mean, if the Georgians are fighting the Ossetians, some right. Ossetian is going to put up there that all the Georgians are pigs, and right. the Georgians will do the same. But that'll get, you know, cleaned up pretty right. quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you'll occasionally come to a page mm-hmm. that's not very good. But mm-hmm. most of the stuff there is pretty good. Mm-hmm. And I think that's got to be our model with links. Right. Some people get very concerned that we aren't policing this or aren't policing that. We can't. And we're far better off to get lots of people.
Right.
And you know, it fundamentally gets back to the same approach as we had that we share, and many of us at Link share, in terms of language learning. You have to be able to deal with uncertainty. You have mm-hmm. to be able to deal with mistakes. You're going to learn better if you don't try to nail everything down. You're right. going to learn this term. You're going to learn this rule and study it. And the first half of the year, we're going to work on. I mean, I get on these Russians where people are learning Russian, these sites, mm-hmm. and they spend the first 6 months on verbs of motion. And then right. the next 6 months, they're going to do, cases.
Right.
Well, just because you work at them for the first 6 months doesn't mean you're going to learn them in the first 6 months. It's all part of term fuzzy logic. It's not linear.
Well, plus, if you're studying motion verbs, I guess that's all you're doing then for Russian, because if you try to study any kind of read anything or listen to anything while you're studying only motion verbs, presumably there's going to be other words in there besides motion verbs. Then what
exactly,
are you supposed to do?
Exactly, and this comes up all the time because I do look at grammar books and I want to see how they present grammar.
Right.
And it's impossible. If you say, okay, chapter one, we're going to do pronouns,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to have any verbs?
Right.
How can you have a pronoun without a verb?
Right.
You're not going to have any tenses? You end up with
right.
stuff that gets introduced out yeah. of order.
Right.
But you focus on, well, really only want you to learn this. So all the other stuff you hear, just forget about
ignore,
it. Just focus on
yeah.
this. It doesn't work that way.
No.
So what did I say? Creative disorder. Not in terms of a mental disorder, but creative anarchy.
Right.
I think we have the means now where anarchy can be quite creative in certain circumstances. I mean, you can't build an airplane
mm-hmm.
based on anarchy. There have to be certain standards or the plane
right.
will crash.
However, there are all kinds of examples of websites that have made at least a portion of their site or code or software available for outsiders to play with, to build
mm-hmm.
extensions for, to integrate with their own products
right.
or whatever. And which only ends up enhancing the original product.
Well, didn't we...
I mean, we have to eventually try and do that ourselves
well,
here.
Well, didn't we have take advantage of some work that Alejandro had done in Mexico on our image cropper?
I'm not exactly sure where that came
from. He took it
came
a little
from,
further, but...
Yeah, that wasn't quite what I was getting at. Like,
right.
I was getting at opening up our sites, like an API interface
right.
with our site
mm-hmm.
so that people could build extensions that interacted with our site.
Mm-hmm.
Alejandro had a component that I think he had done or worked on that we were able to use in our image cropper.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something different.
Okay. Yeah, so I think that we have to, I think the new world we're heading towards is more creative, because there are perhaps fewer rules, more opportunities for people to contribute, and that's what this whole—that's the Web 2.0 environment.
Absolutely.
And there's going to be some friction at times. There's going to be disagreements. There's going to be some pieces here and there that maybe where there are mistakes or
mm-hmm.
problems, and we just live with it and move on.
Right. And people will figure out. You know, in terms of at least content on our site, what it makes sense to produce, what it doesn't make sense to produce. This is some things are easier for some people, so other things are easier for others. For instance, some people like to record podcasts and have good sound quality. Other people have bad sound quality, but then they can do other things like transcribe
or write things.
So people have to find their own way, and I guess fundamentally, the more people we have doing stuff and interacting, the quicker we will build up our content and our community, and the more likely people figure out what works and what doesn't.
Well, you know, it reminds me when I approached the American, Society for Applied Linguistics, and asked them to look at Link, and you know, after 6 months and much prodding, they finally said, "Well, we found you know, there was no overarching pedagogical theory or something like that that supported what you were doing." And of course, I hadn't presented it to umpteen conferences and published papers cross-referencing other people and stuff. Well, yeah, but so what?
Well,
maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I mean, I was on the
The point is that whatever they're doing also maybe works, maybe doesn't. In fact, doesn't work for most people, because conventional language teaching, in fact, doesn't work for most people.
That's right.
But yes, it's been cross-referenced and studied to death.
And they have their different fads at different moments.
Right.
And right now there's a fad called multiple intelligences and differential instruction. And you know, of course, they're probably running seminars all over the country on this thing, and
right.
It'll have no impact on the success of teaching languages
right.
in class. None, zero.
None.
The
yeah.
bigger impact is from probably the quality of the teacher
mm-hmm.
in terms of how encouraging and enthusiastic the teacher can be, and if classrooms are willing to move people towards a system where they are able to read and listen to things that they like
mm-hmm.
and not have to follow some structure that's imposed on them by the teacher,
mm-hmm.
accompanied by tests and all the usual stuff. So long live creative anarchy in our schools. We need anarchy in our schools.
You heard it here first.
All right.
We'll talk to you next time.
Anarchy at Link.